Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, places, stories, and events in our Central Iowa community. I am Mike Metz, your host for this hour, along with engineer Mike Murphy and Pat Schlerbaum, Milford Township's resident naturalist and good neighbor. Anna Magnuson, alias Anna Banana, has joined in with our bunch via Zoom. Hello, Anna.
Hello, Local Talk team.
Later in the hour, Anna will share her heart-to-heart and tune-in Tuesday messages. Pat, you know, I've been noticing that some of these wild critter activities since last week, they're really ramping up their act. The finches, the house finches are feeding each other. The cardinals are singing their territorial calls. What are you noting?
I think they're shifting from survival in the winter to, this will pass. I think there's some elements of spring going on. And even the migratory birds, you know, they're actively stocking up on the protein. Some of these American tree sparrows, delightful.
Getting ready to head north.
Yeah, it's got that little reddish rufous-colored cap there. Yeah, they'll be sometimes as far as 2,000 miles.
Oh.
A lot of beard feeder activity, and spring is in the air.
Spring is in the air. Yeah. So with that, we're going to let our listeners just reflect for a moment on what they've been hearing, and then we'll join our first guest. Doesn't that just make you want to wake up to a sunny day? And in fact, it almost makes me want to fall back to sleep on a nice warm afternoon, as that's what we can look forward to. Claude Debussy's Prelude to an Afternoon of a Fawn. And we'd like to welcome with that Karen Kedrescu, director of the Carrie Chapman Catt Center for Women in Politics. She's a political science professor at Iowa State University, and her research agenda focuses on women and politics and civic engagement. Hello, Karen.
Good morning, Mike, and thank you for having me here this morning.
I thought maybe that woodwind section would stir your feelings too this morning.
Yeah, absolutely. I love the Debussy piece.
That's great. Well, explain to our listeners who may not know, what is the Carrie Chapman Catt Center for Women in Politics?
Yeah. So we were founded almost 30 years ago, and there's really a twofold mission, both of which stem, of course, from Carrie Chapman Catt's life of activism. So on the one hand, we do focus on academic research on women in politics, and we pay some special attention to Iowa, I think appropriately enough. And then also we are focused on civic engagement. So in that capacity this year, for example, I worked with a group of students on making sure that Iowa State students turned out to vote in the most recent presidential election. And now we're gearing up and thinking about how we're going to inform students about the upcoming municipal and school board elections that will be happening in the fall.
So the center is located on the main campus of Iowa State University.
Yes,
so
we are. We're actually in Carrie Chapman Catt Hall, which is this magnificent old Victorian era building. So we're very fortunate to have a great location and to work in a beautiful space.
Yeah, I agree with you there. So tell our listeners, let's inform folks on who your speaker is going to be for your upcoming event.
Absolutely. So this coming Friday, we are hosting the first of our Ready to Run workshops, which are designed to provide the tools and information that people need to run for office and to also seek appointment to public boards and commissions. It's open to men and women alike, but there is a sort of a push towards getting encouraging women to run for office, given that they are underrepresented in public life. This year, Ready to Run is free, and it will be virtual. So you can go to our website and go ahead and register for one workshop or six, because we will be holding additional workshops in March and April as well. In conjunction with that, we are having our annual Mary Louise Smith Lecture. And for those of you who are Iowans and know Iowa history well, Mary Louise Smith was the first woman who was chair of the Republican National Committee. So she was very prominent in her own right. She mentored a number of prominent Republicans within Iowa and elsewhere. And we host a lecture in her name at least annually. So this year we are having Representative Katie Porter, who represents Irvine, California in Southern California. Representative Porter is the daughter of two Iowa State alums, and she herself was born in Fort Dodge and raised in different areas around the state. Before she ran for Congress, she was a law professor at the University of California, Irvine, and she has now just been elected to her second term in Congress. But even in her first term as a freshman, Representative Porter made quite a name for herself for her incredibly astute questioning, her careful preparation, and we have asked her to talk not only about her experience in running for office and capturing what is traditionally a Republican district, but also her experience in Congress and the power of congressional oversight. Her incisive questioning, how she prepares for those hearings and things like that. I want to give a shout out to Jeff Johnson at the Iowa State Alumni Association. He actually helped us secure Katie Porter as this year's speaker by reaching out to her parents as alumni. And then we were able to get her contact information. So
yeah,
the involvement of the Alumni Association.
I would agree. Jeff is persuasive in many aspects.
Absolutely.
Of things like that.
We are so fortunate to have him at Iowa State.
Now, you mentioned that Representative Porter just recently won her second election. She originally was voted in 2018 as a representative.
Yes.
So she's somebody that your program is more or less targeting as far as getting into the run, as it were.
Well, and she's a good example of what we hope that women can achieve. And of course, you know, asking women to start off by running for Congress in the get-go might be a pretty big lift. But we also, you know, need women in the Iowa State Legislature. Iowa is right about at the national average in terms of the number of women in its state legislature. Though we did lose a couple of seats with, you know, Marianne Miller Meeks going on and winning her seat to the U.S. Congress. But we, you know, realized that we need to continue to put pressure on this. And another interesting thing about Iowa is that Iowa is the only state that has a gender balance law that applies to municipal and county level boards and commissions. So there are six or seven states that have gender balance laws for their state level commissions. But in Iowa, it's not only state, it's local level as well. And what that means is that boards and commissions should be balanced by gender, 50-50, or if it's an odd numbered board, no more than N plus one, 50% plus one. And what we have found is that when the gender balance law was first enacted, there was a big jump in terms of the number of women that were appointed to boards and commissions and the percentage of boards and commissions that were in fact gender balanced. But since then, it's kind of leveled off. So what we find is that among the people who serve on these local boards and commissions, it's about 30% women, and they are not evenly distributed. So they tend to be concentrated on certain types of boards and commissions like health and library and things like that. So part of our Ready to Run program, which is different from ones that we have elsewhere, is that we also talk about the process of getting appointed to boards and commissions. And we try to demystify that and encourage women to think about serving on boards and commissions that might not be the kind of typical ones. So how do they get on zoning? You know, what do they do about construction regulation? Things like that, you know, and what do they have to contribute to those kinds of boards, even if they don't have necessarily backgrounds in those fields?
So what you're essentially saying is if you can start out locally, you get familiar and find out the workings behind those boards.
It helps build a political resume and networking and, you know, the basis for fundraising that will then
Right.
lead women and other people into considering higher office. But even if women don't necessarily have that kind of political ambition, having their voices at every level of government is absolutely important. It's important in terms of role modeling and the legitimacy of our government, but it's also in terms of their voices and experiences. And so we need to have diversity of constituents who have different ideas and concerns and things like that in every level of government.
Agree with you on that. I've had the honor of serving on a couple of county boards, and you want representation that looks like your county for the most part, and want to hear the voices of everybody concerned. That's for sure. So what can you tell us about Representative Porter's her subject? What's she going to talk about?
Well, because we are tying it into Ready to Run, we've definitely asked her to talk about her journey into political office. So how did she decide to run? How did she, what was her campaign strategy? How did she go about, you know, raising money and things like that? And then we've also asked her to morph into how she decided to take on congressional oversight as a way of holding people in power accountable. How does she prepare for the hearings? How does, you know, she's notable for bringing her whiteboard and things like that to the office and really has made, you know, developed a national profile for herself that is very unusual for a freshman backbencher in Congress. And so we definitely want to hear about that story and about what congressional oversight offers to the process. That type of accountability, congressional oversight is often really overlooked as a congressional power and responsibility, but yet Representative Porter clearly takes it very, very seriously and uses it to ask really tough questions of people within administration and, you know, in the private sector. And so I'm very interested in hearing about how she prepares for those kinds of hearings, what kind of tools she uses to do her research on that, and how she decides who she is going to be asking questions of, you know, when does she decide to step forward and ask these questions, and when does she sit back and let others take the lead? So it'll be very interesting. And she is now on, in fact, the Government Oversight Committee this term. So I'm interested in hearing about her committee selection process as well.
Abit, maybe we can learn a few things for our local situations as well. That would be great.
Absolutely. And, you know, one of the benefits of a democracy, right, is that citizens and elected officials do have the opportunity to hold people in power accountable through incisive questioning and preparation. And by extension, you know, one of the responsibilities of Congress is to hold the executive branch responsible. That's part of the system of checks and balances. And obviously, Representative Porter takes that very, very seriously. So,
gosh,
I'm very much looking forward to her address.
It's been a while since I've taken political science when I was at the Iowa State here, but it sounds like you might have a class or two that would be interesting to attend. I think it could
absolutely. We are certainly hoping things. There will be a number of students attending. I'm teaching women in politics this semester, so I am requiring my students to either go to Ready to Run or Representative Porter's address this week, and certainly we'll be reminding of them about that at 2 o'clock this afternoon.
I can see that 11:30, 12 at night little report that they've got to submit to you for the next morning as well.
Absolutely.
Accountability. That's great. Tell us again when, where, and how people can get signed up.
Okay. So the speech is Friday night at 7 o'clock, and it is virtual and free and open to the public. So if you go to the CAT Center website, or just go to the, you know, iastate.edu and Google Representative Porter, you can get the link. And just go ahead and click on that as of Friday night. So we look forward to when we can have Mary Louise Smith lectures in person again, because I really do miss gathering with, you know, friends and donors and students. But for now, this is the technology that we have, and we're really grateful that we are able to share it with the public at large.
Agree with you. At least we can do some social interaction here via Zoom, but it sure would be nice to be able to rub elbows again and talk about different issues.
Absolutely.
Well, Karen, thank you very much for joining us this morning, and we'll put that information on our site so folks can see that at KHOI as well.
Fantastic. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Karen, and have a good day.
Okay. Thank you. You too, and to all your listeners as well.
Thank you.
This is Anna Banana. That was a great interview.
Well, thanks, Anna.
I am going to be participating in Ready to Run training on Friday and looking forward to it.
Anna, are you thinking of also, you're saying run. Are you implying something?
No, I just want to learn. I'm just curious to know what the class is going to be like and the training, and I figure it'll help with in all aspects of my life of being a better citizen in Ames.
I think it's very good that we're all informed here. Maybe, Anna, if you could just share one of your little heart-to-hearts.
I can do that. So why don't you guess one of the songs that I'll be playing tonight at 8:30 on Heart-to-Heart Messages. Let's see if you can get it, Mike Metz. So this dedication is for all those who are preparing or ready to be your best self or running for office someday. I dedicate these lyrics to you. I am not a stranger to the dark. Hide away, they say. Because we don't want your broken parts. I've learned to be ashamed of all my scars. Run away, they say. No one will love you as you are. But I won't let them break me down to dust. I know that there's a place for us. For we are glorious. When the sharpest words want to cut me down, I'm going to send a flood, going to drown them out. I am brave. I am bruised. I am who I'm meant to be. This is me. Look out, because here I come. And I'm marching to the beat I drum. I'm not scared to be seen. I make no apologies. This is me. So I bet you know what that song is. Nope, it's not Love is a Many Splendor Thing. I'll just tell you that right now.
You just took the words right out of my mouth.
I know what you're going to say. I can guess. So this, I'll fast forward to heart-to-heart messages today at 8:30. Tina Bakehouse will be my guest. And she was the chief creative officer for a bank in Malvern, Iowa. Chief creative officer. I love that title for someone that works at a financial institution. And so when I met her at this conference in Des Moines, I wanted to find out why a bank in Malvern, Iowa will hire a chief creative officer. And do you know she did raps to learn about spending plans? She used theater, all of her theater arts to be able to do that. And so she is just an amazing powerhouse, is Tina B. So she's going to join me for the whole entire hour at 8:30. I'm giving you a little sneak preview of my Tune In Tuesday message.
All right. Next, we're going to be joining Dan Culhane, the intrepid director of Ames Chamber. Hello, Dan. How about if you just kind of fill us in on what's happening with the chamber lately?
Well, you know, I was interested in Karen's comments, who just stepped off the call here. The Ames Chamber of Commerce is actually a sponsor of Ready to Run. That's a terrific program the CAT Center organizes and runs for Iowa, and so we're proud to be a sponsor of that important program. You know, we're following the Iowa legislature right now. One of the big things that we paid a lot of attention to, Mike, in the last few weeks has been this 10-year legislation.
Right.
I don't know if you've heard about that, but that's a serious thing for our community and certainly for our institution that we in Iowa State University. We were proud to be an advocate for that, making that go away. I'm not sure it's completely dead yet, but we've been paying close attention to that because we know the detrimental impact that would have not only on Iowa State University but our other region institutions.
Well, I can tell you from experience that I worked with a number of individuals that spent 5 to 6 years trying to get tenure, and those folks put in yeoman's work for that kind of a operation, that's for sure.
And Mike, if I could just frame this, there was a bill to take away tenure, and is being discussed. And so I think that's what you're referring
to. That's what we're referring to,
so,
yes.
So Mr. Culhane is apparently feeling that keeping tenure at Iowa State is going to be a benefit to the university and also the Ames community.
That's correct. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Okay, Dan. So you're following that. Hopefully that can be resolved for a positive benefit for our community. Do you have anything else to add to that, or do you want to go on to your next area?
No, I would just say that, you know, we're following a wide variety of things in the legislature right now, like we do every year, every time they convene. And, of course, we've got a whole host of other things going on as well. One of the things that we're really excited about is the City of Ames City Council will be reviewing an application for Iowa Reinvestment, an Iowa Reinvestment District tonight, and we're really excited about that. I think, Mike, you and I might have talked about that a little bit last month.
We did, yes.
And so the interesting thing about this process is that tonight, if the council approves that, that will submit the preliminary application to the Iowa Economic Development Authority. Once the Economic Development Authority gives approval for that, or at least the initial approval, that gives the community up to 1 year to submit a full application. And so as you might imagine, there's a lot of moving parts to this process that gives time to the community and the private development community and the chamber and others that are working on this to put this together.
So when you're talking about applications, is this similar to a granting program as far as applying for funds for various projects?
Yeah, it really is. The difference in this, Mike, is that, you know, and we apply for grants to the Iowa Economic Development Authority frequently, and the state will, if you do what you promise to do, you get the money and you get to keep the money, like most any grant. The difference here is that this would allow for the city to capture the new sales tax in this commercial area downtown, and the state would rebate those taxes. So the sale taxes would be paid. The state would, in turn, rebate those back to the City of Ames to ultimately pay down the debt, if you will, on the Aquatic Center project that is being proposed as well.
Sure. Talking about programs and things that are in the legislative branch, let's go a little higher up. There's the paycheck, the PPP program, protection, paycheck protection program. How would that affect us locally? Is that something you're also monitoring, Dan?
We are. You know, the first go-around, Mike, there was so much, so many unknowns related to the Paycheck Protection Program. And our banks and our lending institutions really stepped up and helped customers and non-customers alike get that submitted with quite a bit of success. Now the second round comes along, and I think most businesses that applied the first time will likely apply again. And we're also seeing some others that are applying for the first time. Now, I know the Biden administration came out, I think, yesterday and said that they're going to slow it down and allow smaller businesses to get into the funnel before some of the larger organizations or larger companies across the country. I'm not sure that's been really a problem. I know in the first round there was PPP money left that, you know, the banks were kind of doing an all call to their customers saying, if you haven't applied, there's still dollars available. But just the same, I think it's probably wise that they are slowing this down so that some that, you know, it's easy to make application for some of these things if you've got a CFO and you've got a lot of infrastructure in your business, but a small business, a two- or three-person organization might have a harder time making application.
Sure. That they're chief cook and bottle washer and doing all the paperwork as well, so it's it can be a burden just to keep up with that.
That's
so,
right.
Hopefully groups like you can help those smaller businesses out, at least be aware of things like that.
Yeah.
Let's talk just a little bit about I've been doing a little more business down on South Duff lately, and gosh, it seems like there's a lot more activity down on that part of the city. Especially, I've noted the old Kmart complex seems to be pretty well filled up with businesses. Do you have any ideas what's going on there?
Well, you know, it's been a long time coming. You think about it; it's been quite a few years since Kmart closed. And it took a while to find someone to buy it, and in large part because Kmart was paying rent, their lease had not expired, and so the people that owned the building, it was a group out of California, there was no incentive to move the building or to sell the building or release the building because Kmart was on the hook for that. Once that lease expired, then people got more interested in doing something with the space, and that's what you're seeing now.
Okay.
I know Home Goods opened last week, and if you live under a rock, you wouldn't know that. I mean, social media has been abuzz with the fact that Home Goods was open. I've not been there yet, Mike, but I think if you haven't either, maybe we should go because it sounds like we're missing out.
Yeah,
but it's been very popular, and so it's good to see some traffic and some energy back in that part of the community.
Yeah, I was in that area visiting another establishment that's been there for a while, and was walking out with a handful of paper goods and things, and I noticed there were about three times as many people on that end of the parking lot as there'd been in years. That's for sure.
Yeah.
So let's go a little bit north. How, you know, there's plans in the works of working on the bank stabilization along the Iowa River crossing there and the bridge. Is that going to have any kind of an impact for some of the businesses in that area that you folks are concerned with?
You know, we haven't heard much from the businesses that are there. I think the one that's going to be impacted probably the most would be, there's actually two. They're on either side of the river. The Red Lobster, I think they're going to lose a few parking spaces, but they can reconfigure their lot to maintain. I think they end up losing a net one when it's all said and done. And then Howe Welding on the north side, there's been some concern. I think there might be some ground storage that they might lose. But all that property on the north side, I believe, is in the floodplain or the flood fringe. Pardon me, I don't know those terms probably like I should. But I know the city has worked a long time and very methodically to try and improve this channel to support flood mitigation. And so that will be a good project. But I do know that, like anything, Mike, not everybody agrees with it. But it seems that at this point in time, the city is moving forward with that, and that will be a good project. You know, the one thing that I really like about the rivers running through our communities is that the city council and the mayor's office and the city manager are focusing more energy on how do we maximize those spaces for recreation and a wide variety of outdoor uses. And so I'm encouraged by that, and I think that's a really good thing for our community.
Well, that's a great quality of life issue for mental and physical health, for sure.
Without question.
Dan, have you got anything else as we wrap up the this time frame?
I don't. I just feel like it's pretty nice out this morning, and that's got to be a shot of optimism for us all after the last couple weeks. And I'd encourage you to get out and support your business community, and you know, wear your mask and take the necessary precautions to make yourself comfortable and those around you. But I think we're in for a really good 2021 here in the Ames and Story County community.
Like that optimism, Dan. Thank you very much. And that's Dan Culhane, director of the Ames Chamber of Commerce, with his monthly visit with us here at KHOI.
Thanks, Mike. Have a good day.
Thank you, Dan.
How much is that doggy in the window? The one with the waggly tail. How much is that doggy in the window? I do hope that dog is for sale. I must take a trip to California and leave my poor sweetheart alone. If he has a dog, he won't be lonesome, and the doggy will have a good home. How much is that doggy in the window? The one with the waggly tail. How much is that doggy in the window? I do hope that dog is for sale.
And with that, I'm going to roll out the red carpet to welcome Susan Guiasta with the City of Ames. We've got to get our pets back out. My poor dog had frostbite toes here the last couple days, and my gosh, I don't know what you did, Susan, but the weather's great.
I wish I could take, maybe I don't want to be responsible for the weather, but it is good now, and I hope everybody has a chance to get out and enjoy it. I just have to give shout out to our plow drivers. They worked so hard this weekend, and the streets look great. There was a lot of, I think it was officially 5 inches of very wet, heavy snow, and they did a fantastic job.
Yeah, I know Pat and I both were moving snow in our yards, and it seemed like later in the day it was getting so heavy, I just had to give up. The equipment just couldn't take it anymore. It was... but hey, that means spring is around the corner. So, do you have anything?
Well,
do you have anything for us, Susan?
Oh, just a reminder: we do have a city council meeting tonight. It's our regularly scheduled council meeting at 6 p.m. You can get the agenda, supplemental materials, see what's on the agenda, and learn how to participate by going to our website, cityofames.org. You can go directly to the page by going to cityofames.org/ccmeetings, which takes you right to the most current city council meeting.
Very good. And we have, I see you've let a visitor out so he can romp around in this nice weather. Who have we got today?
So I thought after wrapping up 2020, there might be some appetite out there for some good news. Ron Edwards has been with us, I'm going to probably not get this right, 5 or 6 years?
It's about 8.
Time flies.
It seems like it's just gone so fast. And Ron has done a fantastic job of modernizing and digitizing our statistics. So every animal that comes in and out of the animal shelter is accounted for. And those statistics are really impressive. And as we wrapped up 2020, again, he worked really hard to get those statistics completed. And I thought it might be a good opportunity for him to share with us.
Okay. Well, hello, Ron. What have you got to share with us after your 8 years of being with the city?
Good morning. Actually, it'll be officially 8 years in August, so we're seven, you know, seven and a half is where we're at right about now. Very, very proud to report that once again, another year that we have continued to meet no-kill standards, which means that we're adopting out or returning back to the owners at least 95% of the animals that come in. So that's every beating heart. That doesn't count if they're adoptable and not adoptable. That's every beating heart that comes into the shelter. Some shelters across the U.S. use some tricky math, and ours is complete, unfiltered, truthful data that we're looking at. And just very, you know, pleased with the team that I have down there, our staff and volunteers that help to make that happen, to help to reunite pets with their people and get the ones adopted that come into the shelter.
Yeah. What do you have for population right now at the shelter?
So actually, a good time, great question. We have had tremendous adoptions. We tend to get a lot more cats than we do dogs. I think right now we have about 12 cats in the shelter, which is not very much at all. And thankfully, due to the great adoptions, we're able to help other shelters. We're going to be going on Thursday this week to the Story County Animal Shelter and helping them out. They have over 100 cats, you know, and just down the road from us, the shelter that has so many cats, and we're doing so well. So we're going to help them out, bring some cats back to our facility, put them up for adoption, and hopefully as soon as we get those adopted, we'll be looking to help out some more.
That's great. And I know I've asked you this in the past, Ron, but you're working with area veterinarians to make sure the animal's health is good before a client comes by and adopts a pet.
Absolutely. Every so kind of like the song you had there playing, our adoption fee is $80 for dogs and cats. That includes their spaying or neutering. They're already spayed or neutered before they go home. They have a microchip with lifetime registration, rabies vaccination, distemper vaccinations, deworming, flea treatments. We've done examinations on them, making sure that they don't have any internal or external parasites. So they've come back with negative results on that, or we've treated if they have anything. So it's actually quite a deal for $80 when you think of what it costs to spay or neuter a pet. And often, in a lot of cases, we're paying more for the spaying and neutering than we actually charge for the adoption. But we're there to make sure we get great homes for them, not there to make money.
You know, I kind of had a second thought in mind when I picked that music today, not to mention that Patti Page made that a hit when I was a very little kid. So that was one of my first pet songs that I remember. But the point is the philosophy has changed quite a bit on how we treat animals and how we obtain animals. And it's a great song, but we don't necessarily want to just offer money for pets that are in the window with their sad little eyes looking at you and say, take me. So could you just visit a little bit on our philosophical changes in regards to adopting a pet?
Sure. Well, in addition to my almost 8 years at the City of Ames, I've been actually doing animal sheltering and animal control for almost 36 years now. Started my career in California, where I was born and raised at the largest animal control agency in the United States. So, you know, it has just really changed leaps and bounds since I started. You know, you don't see the boxes of puppies and kittens, you know, at the supermarket door when you're going in, or even, you know, posting out. Of course, we didn't have all of the fancy social media that we have now when I started. And so you just don't see that anymore. And pets are so much more a part of our life. People understand the importance of spaying and neutering, identifying your pets, making sure that they have microchips, tags, personal identification to try to get them back to their people. And pets have also moved into our homes. So they're not just something that you have in your backyard that you throw a bone to occasionally. these are pets that are with us. They're part of the family. They go on vacations with us. Some do. It really has changed how people look at pets. And of course, there are still some out there that are maybe kind of left behind and don't necessarily know responsible pet ownership, that we deal with in the animal control side of our operations, from time to time. But, you know, for the most part, Ames is a very pet loving community. We have wonderful pet owners there, that are very responsible, and accidents do happen. Pets do get out. But we do have a very high reclaim rate. So if people lose their pets' names, they are getting them picked up in most cases, much more for dogs than cats. It takes them a little bit longer to get there for the cats.
Yeah, cats can be a little bit harder to coax into picking up and then relocating, that's for sure. I can talk from experience because between the dog, the two horses, and the four cats, it's a handful. But they're all well-lived, and they're all taken care of by competent veterinarians, I can tell you that. Like you, one of my early aspirations was to become a veterinarian, and I ended up in microbiology, and I know your career is in this similar vein, but you did have a change. So I guess we can say we both identify with that.
Sure. Yeah, it was definitely my career goals. And then honestly, I think it was more of the agency that I worked with. And I really just felt that in my heart and soul that I was born to care for shelter animals and speak for them who didn't have anyone there to care for them. I was very fortunate to have a career in starting off at the largest agency, and we took in over 90,000 animals a year. And that's just mind-boggling now when I think about it. We take in, over about 800 now here at the Ames Animal Shelter. 800, just not 800,000, 800.
Yeah.
And,
tell us a little bit about the actual shelter, the physical facility that you've got there. I know there's been a lot of improvements that have been happening, and if you could just inform our listeners.
Sure. Well, the shelter was built over 25 years ago, so it's showing a bit of signs of aging. You know, when you think of caring for the animals and the chemicals and the water and everything, it kind of wears down a facility. So we were very fortunate during the pandemic closure that we were able to purchase new dog kennels. So we had old chain link kennels in the past, which are really not an appropriate housing environment for dogs in a shelter environment. There's too many pointy ends to the chain link that's dangerous for them. So we replaced those. We replaced, actually early on in my tenure here with Ames, I was able to replace the cat kennels to much, much larger kennels to house our cats in. And when you keep animals long-term, we keep them until they're adopted. We don't have any time limits. You've got to make sure that you're providing the best facilities for them. You're enriching them. You're doing things to help maintain their sanity here, at the shelter. It's very important to make sure that their well-being and their health is taken care of to make them adoptable, to get them into potentially a forever home, hopefully.
Yeah. I note that Susan, I can see her arm moving, so obviously she has a home critter, too, for folks that can't see, but I do the same darn thing. I can't hardly run my mouse on my computer at home because usually there's a cat under one hand and a dog under the other. But
my dog loves these mornings because she gets so much attention. Sit and talk with you and share information, she is right next to me just getting petted and loved on. And Ron helped find my dog. So it was so interesting that you had talked about this idea of cats and dogs being just sort of at the supermarket. I don't really remember that, but I do remember a much more lackadaisical approach to pets, that you would just kind of pick one up if you were interested or buy one at the pet store. And I love the way that it's evolved. And even with the pandemic, it is a little more challenging to come to the animal shelter. You have to make an appointment. I think it just furthers the commitment to the idea of what it takes to bring a pet into your home. And so, it's just not a spur of the moment, I'm going to go pick up some milk and eggs and a kitten. So
it's a lifetime commitment, and that commitment can be anywhere from, you know, a few years to 15 years or more. So it is a lifetime commitment for those furry guys.
And I know as a kid growing up, when we, you know, I was on a farm part of the time because of all my relation, but we lived in suburbs and we always had animals, and it was interesting. For some reason, I have two sisters, and the three of us all had a pet that we had to take care of, and we had responsibilities, and when we were going to go away, we had to make sure that we had somebody who was willing to take care of that little critter if we couldn't take that critter along with us. So, yeah, I think mindsets have really changed, and these little guys, whatever species you have, they sure help you out, especially during this time.
Yes, absolutely.
Well, Ron, have you got anything else that you'd like to share and wrap up before I ask Susan that same question?
Sure. I just want to make sure that everyone keeps an eye on our website. It's updated every 30 minutes, so if we get new arrivals, it's amesanimalshelter.org. You can also see us on the city's website, cityofames.org. And you can see, you know, basically in real time, the animals that are available for adoption. If someone's lost their pet, they can see those online as well. So just definitely keep an eye on our website. Our Facebook page is also very active as well. We post every lost animal that we pick up here in the community on there to help assist people that are looking for their lost pets.
That's great. Thank you, Ron Edwards and Susan, as we say adieu for the day. Any last words?
No, just have a great day. Join us at the council meeting tonight.
Okay. Thank you both. And with that, we will have to welcome in an individual that I know we're all waiting to hear from.
Well, while we're waiting, there's a cat named Hubba Hubba one named Beetlejuice.
Why don't you just slip in with your heart-to-heart messages?
Yes, well, I just wanted to start because Mr. Edwards is still on. So I see a cat named Hubba Hubba, and one named Beetlejuice and Loki. So do you guys name the cats that come in?
We do, and there's usually some kind of story behind each name. Sometimes it's a show we watched the night before. We do actually have a perfect pet name book that we use at the front counter. We try to use unique names that are a little bit different that you don't see every single day, and knowing that most pet owners are going to change the names anyways.
I love that. And there's Miss Tootsie as well. So all of them are cute. So I love that. So thank you so much for all that you do.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Toot, toot, tootsie, goodbye.
It's a musical show.
Yeah.
Well, thank you, as always. Well, it is Tune In Tuesday as I try and tempt you to listen to KHOI this Tuesday. Now, as my friends know at the local talk team, I am lazy when it comes to cooking for one. So here's my regular dinner recipe that I follow to feed myself. Ingredients, cereal, milk. Step one, pour cereal into a bowl. And if I want to get fancy, I will add bananas to the mix. But the other day, I did decide to do some cooking and threw a popcorn in the microwave, a bag of popcorn in the microwave. Ooh. But then I overestimated the cook time, so ended up with burnt popcorn, which, you know, stinks to high heaven. And that stink just lingers forever and ever. But you know what? It's a good thing that it happened because it led to a fantastic way to introduce the topic for the Donna Lana Kitchen Show, and which is a heart-to-heart message that is a poem by Marge Piercy.
You know,
so here we go.
Anna, before you share your poem, I've got to just say, you're kind of the Rube Goldberg of heart-to-heart messages here, the way you kind of weave things. Burnt popcorn leading to the Lana Donna Kitchen. Come on.
I know. There's a link, and there's a link to your show as well. Just wait for it.
Okay.
Wait for it. So what is the name of the poem by Marge Piercy that is the heart-to-heart message to get this all kicked off? What's that smell in the kitchen? All over America, women are burning dinners. It's lamb chops in Peoria. It's haddock in Providence. It's steak in Chicago. Tofu delight in Big Sur. Red rice and beans in Dallas. All over America, women are burning food they're supposed to bring with calico smile on platters glittering like wax. Anger sputters in her brain pan confined, but spewing out missiles of hot fat. Carbonized despair presses like a clinker from a barbecue against the back of her eyes. If she wants to grill anything, it's her husband spit it over a slow fire. If she wants to serve him anything, it's a dead rat with a bomb in its belly, ticking like the heart of an insomniac. Her life is cooked and digested, nothing but leftovers in Tupperware. Look, she says, once I was roast duck. On your platter with parsley, but now I am spam. Burning dinner is not incompetence, but war. So why is it good that I had this stinky popcorn incident over the weekend and found this poem? Well, at noon and 7 p.m. today on the Donna Lana Kitchen Show, the dynamic duo will explore the sense of smell. And they will ask the question, how does the nose know? And what do we know? Well, we know that the Donna Lana Kitchen Show talks about food, farming, recipes, advice, and opinions. Chef Donna and Farmer Lana explore the local food scene with lively discussion and good humor again at noon on Tuesday, repeated at 7 p.m. Now, Mike Metz, I don't know if this is a good lead into talking about smelling when I understand that on Science Bites that you and Sam Wormley will be talking about greenhouse gas inventory.
Most greenhouse gases that we'll be talking about don't have, they're odorless and tasteless, so, but that's okay. The thing is what they do, and that's what we're talking about. We're running the second part of the Ames Climate Change Study at 4:30 to 5 on this Tuesday. So, listeners, tune in.
The Science Bites this Tuesday. So when I was thinking about gas and smells, that has nothing to do with what you guys are talking about today.
Maybe what we'll have to do is do something about ferrous sulfate or something Ooh. Like that sometime.
There you go. That would be a smelly show.
Or methane.
Now, again, I kind of gave you a sneak preview, but again, at 8:30 tonight, you get to spend time with me for the Heart to Heart Messages show. Where I select songs to match to the guest message on with our heart-to-heart conversation. So again, we'll have a heart-to-heart conversation with Tina Bakehouse, also known as Tina B, about having the courage to start something completely new and getting little tips and tidbits throughout the hour from Tina of how she helps others share their stories with confidence and communicate more effectively. Now, we had Mr. Edwards on today and had a little conversation about Susan's dog that we see on local talk in the morning and your pets on the farm. So Tina B also lives on a farm in Malvern, a Maple Edge farm, and she has goats, and she has a segment she calls You Goat This, and she has conversations on a rooftop of her farmhouse. So it'll be an interesting conversation. So I think I already did the lyrics to the song that I had matched for one of the messages. And again, Mike Metz, you've had some time to think about those lyrics while we were waiting for Dan Colhane today. But what did you think they were?
I'm still sticking with my original, Anna. And I know you told me it's wrong, but I think deep inside it's right. And that's Love Is a Many Splendored Things.
Well, you'll just have to find out if you listen tonight at 8:30. If Mike Metz was wrong, and indeed he was, I'll just give you the hint, he is wrong. So let's do a sneak preview and jump ahead to this Thursday. Mike Murphy, what's going on with you name it?
Well, of course, February is Black History Month, and so this will be Black History, Black Her Story, and it's going to be songs about events or mostly people in Black history, such as, you know, anyone from Paul Robeson to Angela Davis to Marcus Garvey.
Well, that's a lot of reasons to tune into KHOI. What other reasons do we want to listen to KHOI superstar teams?
Yeah, this is Pat Schlarbaum. You know, the Dan Colhane interview this morning where he was able to present the framework of our national issues and bring it right down to the neighborhood right here in Ames, Iowa. That's the sort of thing that KHOI is a strength in providing the listeners.
Yeah.
It was just a classic example of why community-supported radio is so important.
I agree with you, Pat.
Thank you, Anna Banana. You've been listening to Local Talk here at KHOI Community Radio. Remember that you can also hear it online at khoifm.org and find links to the guests and information you heard during the program. KHOI provides a platform for citizens and public officials to air opinions and information. The views of our guests do not necessarily reflect those of KHOI. KHOI is community, nonprofit, nonpartisan media. Live streaming of our broadcast can be found online at khoifm.org.
This program is produced by Lynn Carey and Ursula Rudenberg and engineered by Mike Murphy. Thank you, Mike. You heard from Karen Kedrowski, director of Carey Chapman Catt Center for Women in Politics, Dan Culhane, director of the Ames Chamber of Commerce, Susan Guiazda, City of Ames Information Officer, and Ron Edwards, Animal Control Supervisor. I have been your host, Mike Metz.
Please consider becoming a member of this fine community radio station with your financial support. Go to our website at khoifm.org and press the yellow donate button to begin the process of becoming a member.
Our theme song, as always, is Backtracking by Tom Richards and Al Harris from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. Stay tuned for Headline News and Democracy Now! At 8 a.m. and Morning Masterpieces at 9 a.m. Remember, you, the listener, are what makes KHOI meaningful and possible. Thank you for listening. Thank you for supporting KHOI. And
see you again
on the radio.